Before we begin, a special thank you to our Patreon supporters. In particular, a huge debt of thanks to our cabinet member level supporter, Arlena Frank Waller. Your support is critical to the success of this podcast. Another thank you is owed to our ambassador level supporters, Jeff Flores and Todd Kent. Thank you to all of our patrons for making this episode possible. Together, we are reaching the top government podcast charts in countries ranging from Europe to Asia, and we are just getting started. I hope you enjoy this episode.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the New Diplomatist Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Garrison Morado, and today I am very excited to be joined by Pedro Souza, a returning guest to the podcast and expert on all things Europe from Portugal. Pedro, it is an honor to have you back on The New Diplomatist.
Hi, thank you so much for having me again.
Now, Pedro, for those who may not be quite as familiar with your work or who may not have heard our first interview we did last year, perhaps you can give the listeners a brief rundown of your experience in the field.
I'm a professor of international relations at the University Portugalense in Porto, Portugal. I'm also a researcher at the Portuguese Institute of International Relations. I basically work with foreign policy, mainly Portuguese foreign policy and Southern Europe foreign policy, also diplomacy, globalization and global governance. In that sense, I look much more into European studies than other areas of the world.
Well, it's an honor to have you back on the podcast. And I asked Pedro to come on today to discuss a little bit about an event that involves his native Portugal, which is their ascendancy to the presidency of the Council of the European Union. Now, this is a rotating position in Portugal, first ascended to it January 1st, and we'll have it for a six-month period of time. Now, Pedro, could you talk to us a little bit about what the role entails to a certain degree? I know it's very complicated, but just some general overview of what that presidency looks like, and then we can get into discussing some of Portugal's priorities.
So, yeah, as you said, this issue of the Council of the European Union, Portugal is now holding the rotating presidency of the Council of the European Union. It is for 6 months. So afterwards, it's Slovenia that's going to hold the presidency. Previous to it, it was Germany. It is one of the most relevant decision-making bodies in the EU. It is, due to its composition, its competencies, its frequent meetings, both in a more political or in a more legal sense. It has a number of different configurations. So basically, the Council meets in different configurations depending on the policy area and the ministers which are attending. So the main council is the Foreign Affairs Council, so obviously a foreign policy concerns. There are, again, a number of other council configurations: economic and financial affairs, justice and home affairs, general affairs, and so on. So again, this presidency rotates, and Portugal being in charge of this has to chair the different ministerial meetings. So all of these meetings are at the ministerial level or lower than that, diplomatic, bureaucratic levels. And so that's part of it. So that's preparatory meetings. And Portugal basically does its share, help the agenda setting process, and help find some level of coordination and consensus between the parts.
You know, it's interesting because the three previous times that Portugal has held this role also came at very important inflection points, let's say, for Europe. The first being January to June of 1992, Portugal taking that presidency position literally the week after the Soviet Union collapsed. Fast forwarding to their second time was January through June of 2000, so the opening months of the 21st century, also a time of significant change and opportunity. Also, the July to December period of 2007, right at the opening stages of the Great Recession, as we call it here in America, or the fiscal crisis, if you will, the subprime mortgage crisis. And then now, of course, the 6 months opening 2021. Now, for a relatively smaller state on Europe's periphery, that's a significant series of historical instances for it to be leading from in this position. And currently, the crisis on everyone's mind, of course, is COVID and what's been going on around the world, not just with Europe. But with this position, Portugal's uniquely primed to potentially draw more attention to this issue. Perhaps you could give the listeners sort of an update on how the COVID crisis is currently being faced in Europe as it pertains to vaccinations, as well as maybe on a national level for Portugal.
for the case of Portugal, let's maybe start with that. Portugal has had a difficult couple of months now. The number of cases and all of that sort of went out of control since Christmas and entering 2021. Portugal at some point even reached the highest number of cases in the world in terms of, well, in percentage of the population, so with the highest percentage of cases. It has now been under lockdown for a month or so with very good results, with a very fast decrease of the number of cases. It has started a vaccination program. All of the EU countries have started vaccinating. In terms of the EU, the European Commission centralized the process of purchasing the vaccines and the distribution between member states. And that has helped somehow the bargaining power of each of the member states. At the same time, there have been some difficulties mainly related with the production levels of the companies involved, where they have not been meeting the targets that they have set under contract with the European Commission. Nevertheless, the process is going quite well, a bit slower than expected, but quite well. But again, the European Commission took on this role, this leadership of to centralize, to become a key actor in terms of purchasing the vaccines and distributing them amongst member states in a equitable distribution process. There have been some cases, especially Hungary has broken down this idea or this notion of a joint coordination, of a joint organization in terms of purchase, and sought different vaccine providers. But so far, it is the only one that was actually done that. While majority of other EU countries, they seem to be quite happy with the process, and they're not looking for other alternatives. In terms of what Portugal could do within this process, again, it is mainly centralized in the European Commission. It has been suggested by Angela Merkel. Again, as I said, the previous presidency was held by Germany, but it was a bit of a discreet presidency. Merkel suggested the Portuguese presidency to accelerate a sort of a EU health or a health for the EU or something like that. In a sense, we don't have EU competencies in terms of health. The EU does some stuff in terms of, for example, the agency for medicine, basically the CDC of Europe. Basically, in many of these cases, it has come to the nation states, not to the EU to actually do stuff. So there was a courageous role by the Commission on this, but overall, the EU doesn't have a very large role on health issues. And it is not so clear what Portugal can do in terms of promoting a stronger element in terms of health or of coordination overall. Of course, it can go on a more informal path. Again, as this is being done and delivered by the European Commission, I think that Portugal is going to focus more heavily on strengthening the economy, on the recovery of the economy that's needed, and the processes that are under negotiation and now under approval to strengthen the recovery of the European economies. Also, the issue of a green Europe or of a digital Europe seem to be on Portugal's mind. And as well, there is also a sense of global Europe, as every time that Portugal held the presidency, Portugal always sought to show, to display its foreign policy role in terms of linkage with South America, linkage with Africa, linkage with Asia. And so it is likely that Portugal tries to strengthen the EU-Africa relationship, relations with India, try to give a new impetus to transatlantic relations. It's likely that it goes further on those issues, rather than specifically on health concerns.
You know, and I'm so glad you mentioned the EU-Africa connection, and we'll get to that in just one second. But going back to one of the points you made a little while ago that I thought was very pertinent, the connection between Portugal's view of the economic recovery with the health recovery on a Europe-wide basis. I saw that the Portuguese Minister of State for Foreign Affairs on the European Vaccination Strategy, Augusto Santos Silva, said the European solution is the best solution and the one that best protects the interests of the European Union and the member states, especially those that are not large economies. And this seems to be a common theme within Portuguese politics within the EU, is the focus on equity, the focus on not leaving anyone behind, regardless of the size of their population. Exactly. We need economic prosperity for all involved. Now, there was a rather significant effort by the European Union to launch a common debt raising or bond market, if you will, from the EU level for the first time to assist countries with their bailout, for lack of a better word, if you would say, here in America. Mm-hmm. Could you perhaps update the listeners now several months into that process, how that's going from a Portuguese perspective, and then we'll pivot back to foreign policy.
Okay, so there are the two major issues in this are Europe is working on, or has finished work on, a multi-year financial framework. Alongside that, a plan for economic recovery and resilience, which again are part of the overall economic financial framework of the EU, but are specifically focused now and have this specific concern and this larger concern than ever before on, of course, stimulating growth, guiding economic recovery, of mitigating employment, unemployment, of trying to fight poverty and inequality. And so this has been on the works for quite some time now. The member states now have to approve this or have to internally accept these strategies. That's where Portugal may play a role in sort of trying to speed up, trying to accelerate this process on a more national level. So obviously it has to do with Portuguese diplomacy doing that or trying to improve that. But overall, that's one possibility. That's something that Portugal can do, and it's probably going to be relevant to make this process faster in a sense. And that's part of the concern. A second element of Portugal's concern, which is not new also, has to do with social rights or with a more social agenda. What is also part of the agenda for the Portuguese presidency has to do with a social summit. Portugal is going to hold a social summit of the EU in May. It is likely to implement the European Pillar of Social Rights. And so that is sort of distinctive of this presidency, because it wasn't so much present in the German presidency or will be in the Slovenian one. And it's also because the rest of the agenda, the remainder of the agenda, like a more global Europe, a more digital Europe, or a greener Europe, have been over the course of time part of the strategy. So again, this more social focus during these 6 months is also something that may bring something to the table in terms of Portugal adding something to this process. Again, there have been a couple of issues in this multi-year budget. Hungary and Poland vetoed it because it was supposed to be associated with some level of democratic conditionality. Hungary and Poland have been having some strains, some issues in terms of the rule of law, of the quality of democracy, and so on. That was fixed, or that was solved, so there is no direct conditionality. Now we are just waiting for member states, or for the members to ratify, to put this in place so that we can all start this process, this European process of further recovery. I think it is the most relevant economic tool the EU ever had and probably will have in a lot of time. And it is crucial for economic recovery in times of crisis.
And what would you say is the mood inside of Europe from your perspective? Obviously, I know it's a very, you know, multifaceted structure with 27 some odd countries. But would you say there's a generally optimistic mood about the direction of the recovery currently against the crisis? Or would you say there's some concerns? And what might some of those concerns be, or optimism alternatively?
At this point, it seems that the biggest concern is yet focused on health issues, on getting the vaccine out, on the right measures, rather than specifically on rebuilding the economy. I think that's going to take at least some 6 months more or something like that. At a national level, we already see, though, those constraints, those limitations, and the number of businessmen, of specific economic activities, which are facing a lot of problems. It is interesting to note as well, there have already been made some comparisons, some studies about the increase of response, or the size of the response in terms of the state towards the response to these companies that have been shut down or that cannot work due to COVID regulations. And there is a huge variability amongst member states. Germany is one of the states which apparently provides most help to those companies which have been temporarily closed or cannot fully work due to COVID. In other European countries, that has been on a smaller scale. So that is also a concern in the sense that it may give a very different ground for those companies when they have to recover in the end of this year or in 2022. But so far, I would say that the biggest concern is yet so far on the vaccine, on the health measures. Overall, there are a number of activities in services, even in goods as well, which have been concerned with the size of the assistance by the state. So far, states have been able to overlook, of course, deficit rules, debt rules, to do their best to answer to the crisis. But they fully know that in a year from now or in 2 years from now, the European Commission is going to be very strict about deficit rules and debt rules. So again, for some member states, especially those who have been in higher surveillance by the European Commission, the case of southern European states, for example, there is also this concern of while they are doing, they have put in place measures to help businesses which have been on a partial shutdown, they also know or they also feel that they can't overhelp. Otherwise, they will be in trouble a year from now or 2 years from now with the European Commission regarding debt rules and deficit rules. But so far, those are the main concerns, I would say, regarding the health / economics approaches. Yes.
You mentioned earlier that the Portuguese definitely have a particular emphasis or outlook on reminding Europe to look outward in foreign policy, and in particular on Europe's southern flank and relations with Africa, which, of course, given Portugal's history and the history of the discoveries and at one point empire definitely plays a major role in their foreign policy thinking. But I noticed that even within the formal statements of the Portuguese presidency of the Council of the European Union, even this week, António Costa, the prime minister, mentioning that Africa will always be a priority for Portugal. That's why we must work together as equals with a very clear aim to achieve lasting peace and to build prosperity together. Now, he said that at the G5 Sahel summit with some of the Northern African countries. Perhaps you could give an overview to listeners who may not be quite as familiar with that unique and often overlooked, at least on this side of the Atlantic, relationship between the European Union and the African Union, what with the upcoming summit that they will have, like you mentioned, the Portuguese presidency, trying to focus some attention on this. What would you say is some of the importance of this, maybe in relation to public health as well as foreign policy for the year going forward?
As you said very well, it's very likely that the EU-Africa summit, it was supposed to occur in October, but of course it was postponed due to COVID. It is likely that it will occur in June. And again, for Portugal, Portugal always sought to show or sought to increase this global role in terms of Europe. Of course, that due to changes in the EU architecture, the specific role that Portugal holds now, the rotating presidency, no longer has the same dimension in terms of foreign policy that it used to have, because over time the EU developed its own actors for coordination in terms of foreign policy. However, Portugal always brings this focus in terms of providing itself or showing itself as an asset in terms of the good relationship, the good relationship with African countries, with Latin American countries, with some countries further to the east, which is the case of India as well. In previous presidencies, there have been summits with Africa, quite remarkable as well, with Brazil, with India, with China. And so, again, this global agenda has been sort of reduced or limited, as now we have a high representative with more powers in terms of foreign policy, but it is likely that Portugal also reinforces this role. Again, the point of Portugal is always showing itself as a sort of a mediator when it comes to dealing with Latin America, but especially with Africa, as an actor which is interested, but which doesn't have tremendous economic or political interests, concrete interests, so that would ease or that would facilitate the process. In 2000 and in 2007, previous EU presidencies, Portugal always fought for these summits, and again, it's likely to occur. The strengthening of the partnership, though, it is not so clear yet at this point what exactly could that summit entail in terms of content. Even in the case of the summit in 2007, it was more significant, the visual role, I would say, or the formal role of it, rather than in terms of content, even in terms of content, Portugal has always sought to strengthen this relation and to show Africa as a sort of a privileged partner. And that has somehow moved towards the EU. There's also part of a point which is relevant, which is up to which extent can Portugal in this rotating presidency pass on its priorities to the EU? And again, it is limited what Portugal can do, because there is, of course, a troika of presidencies. Portugal has to coordinate with the previous presidency, Germany, and with the following presidency. And so it means that it is limited what Portugal can do without this trio, without this agreement of Germany and Slovenia in this case. It is limited because its powers, again, are limited to many other EU bodies. It is limited because it inherits a lot of this agenda, moving towards climate neutrality, promoting an European climate pact, a more digital Europe. All of this is inherited. Portugal has to advance discussions and so on. But when it comes to a more global Europe and to strengthening relations, now it seems with India, with Africa and with Latin America, Portugal always tries to put these as key topics in the agenda and tries to advance them significantly. It has succeeded in doing so in the past. It is likely that it will succeed again now. However, in terms of content, it isn't clear yet what it could entail in a concrete improvement of the relations between the two. Maybe the health issue could be somewhat of an accelerator to the meeting. It is not so clear what could exactly be the key point, the key development in that EU-Africa renewed partnership or summit.
Well, it's definitely something to keep an eye on. And speaking of Portugal's role as a mediator, which you mentioned, perhaps we can close out today's discussion talking about Portugal's continued role and relevance inside of the NATO security structure. I know it's a little bit beyond the role of the European Union, but I do believe it's fair characterization based on our last interview, where you shared that Portugal saw itself as a country that could help be the nexus, if you will, between NATO and the EU, reminding the EU of NATO's continued need for relevance and reminding NATO to continue to focus on Europe's southern flank, again, that focus on North Africa. What with the ascension of the presidency of Joe Biden here in the United States, I know we're early days, a lot of events taking place. Is it too early to tell, or do you have some things perhaps to share with the listeners about Portugal and maybe more broadly Europe's perspective towards the incoming Biden administration, Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, kind of the renewed transatlantic posture from Washington? How is that being received in Europe, or is it too early to tell?
I think that overall the EU expects more favorable, more friendly relations, which are closer in terms of what Joe Biden's agenda and strategy seems to be, closer to what the EU is looking for. A stronger defense of multilateralism, democracies overall, of liberal democracy, fighting climate change. So all of that, and even on a commercial level, it all seems to be closer to what the EU agenda is. And so that is something that's been quite well received by the EU overall. I would say that Portugal in this can have a sort of a kickstarter. You know, again, it has to start again being in this role. It doesn't even, as I said, this role has less and less importance in terms of foreign policy, even though it still has importance in the decision-making process. It is likely that Portugal does not have a decisive role in this, so in the developments that are going to occur. Those seem to be, at this point, the main concerns. Overall, I would say that for Portugal, it is a sort of a relief. Again, Portugal really relies on its alliance with the United States, with the relationship with the United States. And these past 4 years were a bit difficult in the sense of course, we want NATO as it is. We want security and defense as it is. And we do not really want to deal with this refusal of multilateralism, with this refusal of the NATO as it exists, or with this structure or with this payment structure. And so all of those concerns for Portugal, and even the foreign minister, Sanchez Silva, as you mentioned before, he put quite an emphasis on multilateralism, which is, again, something that in a Portuguese agenda is very, very, very critical for foreign policy. Portugal fully understands its role as a small state, as a small peripheral state. And so multilateralism is perceived as being hugely important for Portugal. And so, again, that was a problem with the previous presidency. These are, at the moment, the biggest concerns. However, I don't think we can expect a lot of changes for these 6 months or during, I'm not saying that it is due to Portugal or it's not due to Portugal, but during these 6 months of the rotating presidency. I don't think it is too early yet to see major, major changes in the relationship between the US and the EU. We may see, again, this overall improvement, this overall feeling of, well, finally we have someone we can talk to on the other side. Finally, we have someone which is closer to our agenda. But overall, I do not expect major, major changes in the relationship. I do expect that the pandemic will not dominate what Portugal does in this presidency. Portugal will try to keep its agenda, will try to keep this structure, will try to keep its goals and the regular, the everyday business that it has going on. It is going to condition the agenda. The pandemics will, of course, condition the agenda, but I will say that Portugal will do its best to make sure that the agenda is completed, that these summits are completed, that the social summit is completed, that the financial mechanisms in Europe are fully implemented, and so that, as the previous ones, this presidency can be considered a success. That is Portugal's main role, other than embracing the issue of answering COVID. It's mostly about keeping sure the work agenda still moves on, still continues, and that there is still decision-making process, despite the pandemic and its constraints. I think that's the biggest concern for Portugal.
Well, I'm certain that Portugal will make it a success, as they always have in the past. I think we can take good confidence in that. Okay, and one final question to discuss before I let you go today, Pedro, is there was an article in the South China Morning Post regarding China's view or Beijing's view of the investment pact that's currently attempting to be ratified in Brussels. The belief that China sees a potential aspect of leverage with their relationship with Portugal as Portugal takes on this presidency role. And although the article mentioned that this particular function, as you've mentioned, as president might be limited in the near term because it is no longer quite as powerful as it used to be with the diversification of the EU structure. But nonetheless, China does see Portugal as more friendly than not to Chinese diplomatic interests and is attempting to appeal to Lisbon as another factor of their ongoing drive to get that major investment deal ratified. Could you perhaps talk about what that might portend for Portugal and China and that deal going forward in Europe?
Two very short remarks regarding that topic. The first one is that even when we look at this idea of a EU-India summit being kind of a high point of Portuguese presidency, it seems to match a bit the idea that, well, maybe this is to counterbalance China's influence or something like that. I do not really think that's the goal. However, it might be perceived in that sense, even though, again, as I say, I don't think that's the goal. A second point would be that, again, we mentioned that Merkel suggested strengthening a sort of a health EU. That health EU is not necessarily putting together very different health systems or something like that. It means a sort of an enlarged or an enforced sovereignty, which means, of course, European sovereignty, in terms of production, in terms of equipment, of medicine, not just production, but on maintenance of reserves and stuff like that. So I would say that overall, again, as you mentioned perfectly, Portugal's role in this sense is limited. I don't think that China has that leverage. I don't expect Portugal to change this very specific decision-making very much to favor China. Quite the contrary, I do believe that both these issues, both the EU-India summit, which may be perceived by some as an opposition to China, which it is not, and on the second side, the idea of this strengthened EU health coordination, that may indeed answer or try to strengthen the idea of EU sovereignty, reinforced, strengthened role in terms of production and distribution of equipment and drugs and vaccine, rather than the size of the dependency, which I think it was made very clear by COVID overall, the size of the dependency that EU industry, EU trade and services have on Chinese goods. And so I think that even by some members of the EU Parliament, even in some parliament groups, this is being more and more made aware that this huge dependency is a problem, and that especially in these critical areas, as now is the health area, there has to be strengthened, a reinforced role by the EU to defend its own companies, to guarantee quality, to guarantee equipment and medication rather than fully depending on China. I do think those are going to be more important, let's say, than specifically the edge that China may have on Portugal, so that Portugal would facilitate a friendlier set of positions on China. I really don't think that is going to make much of a difference during this rotating presidency.
Well, unfortunately, we could keep discussing these topics for quite some time, but I believe we've run out of time for today. But Pedro, I do want to say thank you so much for coming back on The New Diplomatist for another interview to share with your expertise on Europe and all things Portugal with the listeners. And I know we'll be having you back on the podcast very soon. And I, for one, am looking forward to it.
Thanks so much for having me again. I'm happy to return.